This is Crime Binge.
Welcome to Crime Binge,
the podcast.
I'm Morgan.
And I'm Sarah.
And this week we are on episode 65, where we are going to be discussing David and Catherine Burney, aka the Morehouse murders.
Yes. And a little summary. In 1986, they were an Australian couple from Perth who decided to make their wildest fantasies come true in a murder spree that would only last for a month, but would be devastating nonetheless.
Yes, but before we get into all of that, I don't know what the accent is. I've been really into accents recently.
I get it.
Yeah. That isn't my binge.
Accents.
Really poorly done accents. But what is your binge this week, Sarah?
So this week, my binge is a YouTube channel.
Okay.
And it's called Jazzy Bum.
All right.
Yeah. And her name is Jasmine, and she's this girl from the UK. She's like our age.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just like super cute. She does like random testing videos. Well, she'll test like TikTok hacks and like stuff on Wish and like crazy clothes from eBay. And
yeah,
she's just super cute. And also she's from England, so she has a great accent.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's entertaining to watch and to kind of like help me drown out the rest of the world, basically. Yeah. And all the shit that's going on right now.
Right.
So yeah,
fair enough.
Not a whole bunch about her. I don't know that much because I just started watching her, but yeah. I think she's super cute and she's funny.
Mm-hmm.
And she really gets into the things that she tries. Like one time she tried the thing you see on TikTok where you put like baking soda inside a ketchup bottle and shake it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just fucking exploded all over her, and she's like, what did I do?
That just sounds like a bad idea.
Oh, 100%.
I haven't seen that trend, but it just sounds like not a good idea.
Yeah, no.
Very nice, very nice.
Yeah. What are you binging this week?
This week I am binging Orange Is the New Black.
Okay.
I finally, after making bold claims about Piper leaving the show and realizing I never finished it, I like left off at the time where they were having like the prison riot. So I was super far behind. So I just finished that show up. The last season was like super woke. They started to get more and more woke as the show progressed.
Yeah, I never watched the last season.
Oh yeah. It was good. Piper stays in it the whole time, unlike the previous claims I've made. But she is my least favorite character, so I didn't super care about her. But yeah, just finally finished that show, basically. I'm just, like, glad to be done with it.
Who's your favorite character?
I really don't know, because I, like, watched it so religiously and then just stopped watching it for years. I couldn't really tell you who my favorite character is. Like, when Poussey, when the whole thing with Poussey happened, I'm not gonna like super spoil it, but I cried.
Oh yeah.
So she was like one of my faves, and I love that actress specifically. But yeah, I just was like, finally finished it. And the way it worked out is we had finished all of what was on Netflix of Wentworth, and then we finished up Orange Is the New Black, and literally the night we finished Orange Is the New Black was September 29th, and on September 30th, the final season of Wentworth came out on Netflix, so we planned it perfectly.
That's awesome.
Without even attempting to do it, and I've never felt such deep satisfaction before that moment.
That is amazing, honestly.
That's the highest moment of satisfaction 25 years on this earth has brought me so far. Oh, goodness gracious. But yeah, did you ever watch that Chris Watts documentary?
I haven't yet.
It's very good. I would suggest watching it only because you get to see like pretty much everything. It feels like almost a first person perspective. Because you're getting like all of their texts and you're getting the body cam footage from the police officers from the second they arrived on scene. So it's very, like, the way they interweave it together is good. And he's just a total shitbag, so.
Yeah.
It's like, crazy to watch him. And it's, oh, the neighbor at one point is so good. You have to watch it.
I will. I was home alone all weekend, and yeah. I know the case, but I didn't want to watch it alone for some reason. So I just, like, spent the weekend watching Family Guy and NCIS. Like,
yeah. I've spent the weekend watching just, like, a bunch of scary movies and stuff like that. I've been on one. It's spooky season, so.
It is.
Yeah.
And Morgan did recommend me a movie last week that I watched. And it's called 1BR, like, One Bedroom.
Yeah.
And it's not scary, but it's a thriller, and it's really good, and I highly recommend.
Yeah, it's, like, a really decent Netflix movie.
It is. Know? Like, it's psychological thriller kind of thing.
It was fun. It's a good watch. Highly recommend. One of my, like, binges from a while ago, Sarah Hawkinson, she does, like, YouTube reviews of horror movies, so I got that from her.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
All right. Enough about us. Before we get into today's episode, we would just like to give a warning. We know it's a murder podcast, but just in case, today is going to talk heavily about sexual assault and murder. So if you're not into that, maybe skip this one. No one's into that. That's a terrible way to phrase it. You know what I mean.
Yeah, if you definitely cannot handle it.
Yeah, if you don't want to listen to that, just skip this week because we are discussing that. Should we just get on with the case?
Let's do it. Let's talk about David and Catherine Burney.
All right, let's get into it. So, to start off, David John Burney was born February 16th, 1951, in Wattle Grove in Western Australia. He was the eldest of five children. The Burney household was not ideal, and the family was described as dysfunctional by school friends and members of the Wattle Grove Baptist Church that the family attended. When David's parents, John and Margaret, went to get married, their local priest expressed concerns of the marriage, saying that they were unsuited for each other and a union between them would not result in any good.
Like, imagine your priest saying that to you before you try and get married.
Yeah, that is not what you want at all.
No.
John was a man of very small stature and was described as unattractive. And Margaret was very crass. She was known for her use of bad manners and profanity, as well as using sex to pay for her cab fares. So she was just a lady ahead of her time, if you ask me. David's parents were both alcoholics and didn't really care for their children. They expected the older kids to take care of the younger ones. His mother wouldn't cook for the family and would leave the refrigerator door open so the dogs and children could fetch their own food from the fridge. Which is strange because do they not know how to just open the fridge? I get the dogs don't.
Yeah.
But can the children not?
I don't know. And I don't understand. Like, do they not know how a refrigerator works? And the food's not going to be cold if they leave the fridge open all day.
I'm not entirely certain of that one, to be completely honest. The house was also never clean, and there were many rumors that the family would engage in incest. David was a very skinny and short boy and was often bullied at school because of this. The family moved to a suburb in Perth in the 1960s, and this is when David met Catherine, as they were neighbors.
So now about Catherine. She was born as Catherine Margaret Harrison on May 23, 1951, so they were only a couple months apart.
Mm-hmm.
When she was just 2 years old, her mother, Doreen, died while giving birth to her little brother, who died just 2 days later. Her father, Harold, decided that he couldn't care for Catherine on his own, so he sent her to live with her maternal grandparents in South Africa. Which is, like, kind of cool, but... Mm-hmm. Her grandmother never let other children in the house, so Catherine never had any friends. She was then bounced around to different relatives for a while until she was 10 when her father decided that he wanted custody of her back, and so she moved back to Perth with him. And Catherine was 12 when David moved in next door and they met. By the time they were 14, they were in a relationship.
Yeah, you're like little neighbor in right? you. That's cute.
It is. As teenagers, though, the couple often got in trouble with the law, and even went to jail multiple times for theft. Catherine's father often begged her to break off the relationship, but you know, like teenagers, his disapproval only made their relationship stronger.
Absolutely.
Catherine was madly in love with David and would do anything he asked of her.
Yes.
When David was 15, he dropped out of school to work as an apprentice jockey because he was so, like, small.
Mm-hmm.
He also moved out of his house and would sleep at the stables in a boarding house. While here, David was alleged to have abused the horses by striking them with objects and forcefully yanking them around.
Rude.
He also became quite the exhibitionist while he was here. He was known to walk around naked or ride the horses while wearing nothing but an open coat.
I feel like that's an incredibly easy way to get a rash or something.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, that's... Don't get naked on a horse.
Horses aren't the cleanest, you know?
Well, even that, just, like, I can't imagine their fur...
Being comfortable.
And, yeah, and being, like, sweaty skin. I don't know. That just feels like a bad idea.
Yeah. One night, keep in mind, he's 15. He entered an elderly lady's room in the boarding house completely naked, only wearing stockings on his head. And this is when he attempted, but failed, to commit his first rape. As a teen, David became a sex and porn addict. One of his brothers said that if David didn't have sex every night, he would go mad.
Well, that's dramatic.
Right? And one time, David asked his younger brother to have sex with him after not having sex for a few days, but his brother said no. And later that night, the brother woke up to David trying to have sex with him.
Yeah, that's like, I feel, gone past an addiction. Or not... Yeah, I don't know.
That's
like,
true.
You just need help at that point if you're genuinely that sexually addicted that you're, like, trying to assault your own brother because you just need that release. Like,
yeah, like, I get, you know.
Just go masturbate.
Exactly, but, like, don't try and rape an old lady or your brother
yeah.
when you're a teenager.
Or ever.
That's, yes,
yeah.
or ever.
So Catherine and David were in and out of jail constantly. At one point, they had 53 counts of theft and burglary between them. There was one time that David and Catherine were both in jail, and this gave them some time apart, which they probably needed. Because
mm-hmm.
when you're also a teen and you're, like, in love, that already is such, like, a deep connection to you, and then also, like, being these people, it was probably, they thought, like, it was them against the world mentality.
Yeah, they were described a lot of times as, like, the Australian version of Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah, very, like, us against them type of vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And in some sources, it says that Catherine got pregnant with David's child as a teen, and when the child was born in prison, it was taken away into foster care. So that could have also been an element of it. After getting out, a parole officer encouraged Catherine to stay away from David and to become a housekeeper for the McLaughlin family. So she did, which she needed to get away from David, let's
yeah.
be honest. She got pregnant by one of the sons, Donald McLaughlin, so on her 21st birthday, the two got married. Catherine and Donald went on to have 7 children together. But when their first child was just a baby, there was a horrible accident. They had some friends over, and when they were all outside saying goodbye to each other, Catherine set the 7-month-old baby on the ground, and he started crawling around. When their friends were leaving, they ran over the infant, killing him. And Catherine witnessed this death, obviously, and was deeply affected by it, and... In time, the couple would go on to have 6 more children. But, again, could have used probably some mental help after
yes.
seeing something so traumatic like that.
Some intense therapy was definitely needed.
Yes, yes. Donald was a council employee and supported the family well until a back injury prevented him from working, and the family had to go on government assistance and ended up having to live in a rundown government-provided house. And not having any good role models growing up, Catherine really didn't clean up and would kind of just let her children run wild. There was, like, no parenting and, like, sitting them down for dinner type of thing.
Yeah, there was no structure at all.
Yeah. Meanwhile, David married a woman named Carrie when he was in his early 20s, and the couple had a child together, which was a baby girl named Tanya. The couple was happy for the first 6 years of marriage. Then David started having multiple affairs, which Carrie pretended not to notice.
Because he was still very, like, into sex and wanted all the time, and so yeah. She was like, I can't give this to you all the time, so she kind of turned her head when he went out and got it from other people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, like, a common thread, I feel like, between serial killers, or especially the serial killers who, like, abduct women with their significant other.
Mm-hmm.
They're always described as, like, having an unquenchable sexual appetite before, yeah. You know? So I'm sure that would be draining on a marriage, and you would just be like, yeah, sure, just leave me the fuck alone.
Right?
The final straw for Carrie was after 10 years of marriage when David had a 16-year-old girlfriend who he moved into the house with them, which is disgusting.
Yeah.
He had his daughter sleep in the room with Carrie while David and his girlfriend slept together in the daughter's room. So Carrie took Tanya and moved them out of the house.
She was like, peace, I'm out.
Yeah.
In 1983, when David and Catherine were both 32, they met up again and began having an affair.
Wish they never met again.
Exactly. Life would have been so much better.
Yeah.
In 1985, Catherine went to go live with David, leaving her husband and 6 children behind. And the two moved in together into 3 Morehouse Street. That's why they call it the Morehouse Murders.
Yes. They said the name!
Right? David began working at a local car wreckers shop, selling car parts just a few minutes down the road, and his coworkers actually described him as hardworking, trustworthy, and intelligent. David and Catherine never got married, since she never officially divorced Donald, but she did legally change her last name to Bernie. David's brother James also stayed with them for a bit after getting out of jail for indecent acts with a minor. This minor was a 6-year-old niece, so, you know, it seems like no one in the family really turned out great.
Yeah, that's not good at all.
So, David's sexual appetite never decreased, and soon he started demanding sex 6 times a day.
Yeah.
Like, how do you get anything done?
Do you go to work? Or are you just staying home? I don't understand.
And he also admitted that he would inject anesthetic into his penis in order to numb it to make him last longer. And, like, if you're already having sex 6 times a day, why do you need it to last so long?
Yeah, I heard, I read somewhere that the anesthetic he was injecting into his penis was, like, cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
Which is
a lot.
It's just so much.
I mean, injecting anything into your penis is a lot.
That's just, you're taking things to the next level sexually for sure.
Yeah. He also would turn to his brother James, mm-hmm. forcing him to have sex when Catherine didn't want to. And apparently, I read that their incestual relationship lasted until David went to jail.
Wow.
So, another example of this fucked up dynamic of a relationship. On David's brother James's 21st birthday, David let James have sex with Catherine as a gift. And Catherine obliged in order to satisfy David, as she was still mesmerized with him and would do anything he asked. And this was actually James's first sexual experience with a woman.
Wow.
David watched as Catherine and James had sex, getting sexually aroused from watching it, and eventually joined in.
Yeah, like, it's just stop with the incest stuff.
Yeah.
You know? Just leave your brother alone and let him live his life.
Like, there are many other ways to go about, like, satisfying your sex addiction.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just have leave your brother partners, out of it. Go to swingers clubs.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I'm sure, well, it's the 80s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like...
That was a thing.
Yeah.
So when Catherine couldn't satisfy all of David's sexual needs and fantasies, David suggested to her that they could kidnap and rape young women and girls. And he convinced her of this by telling her that watching him rape these girls would give her the best orgasms of her life. And whether Catherine actually wanted to do this or was just trying to make David happy, she agreed.
Yeah. When she talks about it, she acts like she didn't want to do it, but then she makes sure that the police know that she was the one who hurt, like, one of the victims, you know? So I just feel like she tries to blame it all on David, but, like, was willing to do whatever to please him. And if it included murder, she was like, yeah, that's fine with me.
Yeah, that's what I think. Like, she was definitely, like, fucking happy to be involved because she was willing to do anything David said.
Yeah.
But I think that, like, it was never in her mind beforehand, and she wouldn't have done anything like that if David had not suggested it.
Maybe, yeah. It just... It's hard to say.
Mm-hmm.
So, their first victim was actually a crime of opportunity. On October 6th, 1986, David was working at the car parts place when Mary Nielsen walked in. Mary was a 22-year-old psychology student at the University of Western Australia. She went into the shop looking for new tires for her car, and David pulled her aside and told her that he actually had some tires at his house for much cheaper. And being a college student, this sounded great to Mary, so she agreed. He gave her his address and told her to stop by after 5 p.m. Later that day, she stopped by the house on 3 Morehouse Street, and as soon as she was inside, David threatened her with a knife. She was then chained to the bed and gagged. David repeatedly raped Mary while Catherine watched, and while watching, Catherine even encouraged David, like asking him questions about what he liked about raping her. This is why I don't feel bad for Catherine.
Right?
Even though he had raped Mary multiple times, David said he was still not satisfied. He decided that he needed to kill this girl in order to get the most gratification. So the couple then drove Mary to Glen Eagles National Park, which was about 50 kilometers southwest, about 31 miles. David took her out of the car and raped her again before grabbing a nylon rope out of their car and strangling Mary. David and Catherine dug a shallow grave and then threw Mary's body in it. But before covering her up, David took a knife and stabbed her in the chest just to be sure that she was dead. The couple then took Mary's car and parked it by the local police station, thinking that it would not cause suspicion there. And it took the police 6 days to locate her car.
2 weeks later, the couple were determined to find another girl. So they even took out an ad in the paper saying, "Urgent, looking for a lonely young person. Prefer female 18 to 24 years to share a single bedroom flat."
Not suspicious at all.
Nah. And, you know, this obviously didn't work. And so the couple decided that they were going to have to go out and look for a victim. So on October 20th, 1986, Susanna Candy was hitchhiking home from her part-time job at a restaurant. She was 15 years old, a straight-A student, and the daughter of one of Perth's top I can't pronounce this word.
Like an ophthalmologist?
Yeah, it's an eye surgeon.
Yeah. Okay.
Sure. So, yeah, an ophthalmologist surgeon.
Sure. Just say eye surgeon.
Yeah.
You don't have to use the fancy word.
Right. Typically, her father would pick her up after work, but for some reason, he couldn't tonight. While the Bernies were driving around, they spotted Susanna making her way home and stopped to offer her a ride. With the presence of a woman in the car, Susanna felt safe and got in. And at this point, Catherine and David had been driving around for hours looking for a victim. When she was in the car, the couple produced a knife and tied her up, driving her back to their house where she was chained to the bed and raped. David was disappointed last time when they killed Mary so quickly, So he knew that he wanted to keep Susanna for longer. Knowing that this would be more dangerous and draw more suspicion, David forced Susanna to write letters to her parents. And in these letters, she told her parents that she had run away to Queensland to spend some time with her friends. They also made her call her parents once and made her read a script that Catherine had written saying that she was okay. The couple kept Susanna for several days, and David raped her multiple times a day. And Catherine would even join in sometimes, knowing that it would turn David on. When David was through with her and decided it was time to kill Susanna, he took out the nylon rope again and started strangling her in the house. But Susanna put up a hell of a fight. David decided that it would be easier to sedate her first, so he forced sleeping pills down her throat. Once she was unconscious, David grabbed the rope again, but then he looked at Catherine and said, "Prove you love me," while handing her the rope. So, Catherine did as she was told and strangled Susanna to death. When later asked why she did it, Catherine said, "Because I wanted to see how strong I was within my inner self. I didn't feel a thing. It was like I expected. I was prepared to follow him to the end of the earth and do anything to see that his desires were satisfied. She was a female. Females hurt and destroy males."
Yeah, that's whack.
Yes.
Is the only way I can describe that. So whack, Catherine.
It really is. Like, sorry. Also, she's a 15-year-old girl. Like, she's not hurting and destroying your husband. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, like, your husband is hurting and destroying females, mm-hmm. not the other way around. The fake husband, sorry.
Yeah, exactly. The couple then put her body in the car and drove her out to the Glen Eagle National Forest, where they buried her body next to Mary's gravesite. The Burnies then sent the two letters that they made Susanna write, and they sent one, like, right after they buried her, and then the next one a week after, to convince her family that she was still alive for that amount of time.
Right.
But her parents reported Susanna as a missing person anyways, believing that she wouldn't just run away. But with the presence of the letters, the police labeled her as a runaway anyways and didn't do any sort of an investigation, just like David and Catherine wanted.
On November 1st, 1986, Nolene Patterson was on her way home from work when she ran out of gas. Nolene was a 31-year-old attractive woman who recently started a job as a bar manager at a golf club. She was standing on the side of her car looking for help when Catherine and David pulled up. She was relieved when she saw that the Burnies pulled up, as she knew them. They had actually helped her put up wallpaper in her house just a few weeks before, which is a weird coincidence.
Yeah.
When she got into the vehicle, thinking that they were her friends and they were going to help her out, David pulled out a knife, holding it up to Nolene's throat. They then tied her up and told her not to move. Once they got back to the house, like the others, she was gagged and chained to the bed and raped repeatedly. However, Catherine was very insecure this time because she knew that David actually liked Nolene as a person. They agreed to kill her right away, but David seemed reluctant and kept putting it off. After 3 days, Catherine thought that David was developing emotional feelings for Nolene, and she feared that she would come in between her and David's relationship. So, in a jealous rage, Catherine picked up a knife and held it to her own throat, giving David an ultimatum. She told him that either he killed Nolene or she would kill herself. David immediately forced sleeping pills down Nolene's throat, and once she was asleep, he strangled her. The couple then drove her body to the state forest, but buried it away from the others. Before covering her up, Catherine threw sand in her face and got great satisfaction from doing this.
Because she's just a petty bitch.
Yeah, like, this murder specifically just, like, upsets me so much because then don't fucking abduct your friend.
Exactly.
Like, don't abduct someone you guys have a personal connection to that you know your man's already, like, thinks is hot.
Yeah.
It's fucking stupid. I hate it. I hate them.
So just a couple days after killing Nolene, the couple was on the hunt for another girl. On November 5th, they spotted a girl sitting at a bus stop. She was 21-year-old Denise Brown. She was waiting for the bus to take her home after spending the evening at a local tavern. The Bernies stopped and offered her a ride home. The couple seemed very friendly, so Denise got in the car. And you know, having a woman in the car is always, like, makes people feel comfortable.
Yeah, and that's why she goes with him, I'm sure, is to ease women into a false sense of security.
So, like the others, shortly after getting in the car, she was threatened with a knife. She was also taken to the house, chained to the bed, and raped. And, again, they forced her to call home to tell her parents she was okay. After 2 days of constant sexual abuse, Catherine decided that it was time for Denise to go. So they dragged her into their car, still alive, but they did have her, like, sedated on sleeping pills.
Yeah.
And they took her to a different place. This time they took her to Wanneroo Pine Plantation. When they got there, it was still daylight, so they waited in the car until nightfall, and David raped her in the car while they were waiting. Once it was dark, they took her out of the car. David raped her again up against the car. And while David was raping her, Catherine plunged a knife into Denise's neck. Denise fell to the ground, but was still breathing. So Catherine retrieved a larger knife from the car and stabbed her in the chest. Thinking she was dead, the couple dug a shallow grave and placed Denise's body into it. But when they started putting dirt on top of her, Denise sat up in the grave, gasping for air. David hit her in the head with a shovel he was using, but Denise was still trying to sit up. So David grabbed an axe out of their vehicle and slammed it into her head 3 times until she was dead. Then the couple, you know, casually finished burying the body and headed home. Except Catherine felt sick and traumatized after how brutal this murder was, and she thought that she couldn't abduct and murder women with David anymore. And she expressed these concerns to David, but he was still hungry with bloodlust and easily convinced Catherine that it would be better next time. That wouldn't happen again, you know? So Catherine agreed with him, but was still kind of uneasy about the idea.
On November 9th, 1986, 17-year-old Kate Moyer had spent a Saturday night out drinking with friends. She was hitchhiking home when the couple offered to pick the girl up. Kate was very drunk, so she gladly accepted the ride. And David and Catherine actually drove her to her house, but when they arrived, Catherine said to David, "I've got the munchies. Do you have the munchies?" And it was later revealed that this was a phrase that the couple would use to indicate to one another that they found a girl they wanted to take, which is just so gross.
Mm-hmm.
So once they reached Kate's house, they didn't let Kate out of the car and instead held a knife to her throat. She asked, "Are you going to rape me or kill me?" And David told her, "We'll only rape you if you're good." She was then taken to the house at 3 Morehouse Street, where she was forced to shower, smoke marijuana, and dance for the couple. They then sat down to watch movies, and they watched Rocky on VHS. And Kate later recalled saying, "I had a 200% chance of dying and a 5% chance of getting away." Just after midnight, David raped her for the first time. Catherine watched the rape and took notes about it. She was then forced to write goodbye letters to her family, shower again, and was raped again. And before bed, David made her take a sleeping pill and handcuffed her to him so she couldn't escape. However, Kate knew that if she took this sleeping pill, that there was a chance she would not wake up the next morning. So she hid the pill under her tongue and stashed it under the mattress when David was asleep. The next morning, David went off to work, and Catherine made Kate call her mother and to tell her she was okay, and she was unrestrained while making this call. She told her mother that she was staying at a friend's house and hoped that her mom would pick up on the strain of her voice and call the friend to see if this was true, but unfortunately that didn't happen. After making the call, someone knocked on the door, And this was the Bernie's drug dealer, actually. So Catherine went to answer the door, again, not restraining Kate. Kate knew that this was her only time she'd probably have to act. So she stuffed her purse and cigarettes under the bed, broke open a lock to a window, and jumped out. And there are some reports that say that she is naked while she makes her escape, and some say that she's wearing black leggings and, like, a singlet. So either way, not clothed very much.
Mm-hmm.
Kate hit her head on the concrete driveway while escaping, but got up and started to run. She tried knocking on neighbors' doors and tried three houses with no answer. She ran until she found the nearest door. She found a man and ran up to him, saying, "Help, I've been raped. Please take me inside and call the police. If a woman comes here and says I'm her daughter, don't believe her. I've been raped."
So once the police arrived, they were originally skeptical of her story, but Constable Laura Hancock believed her from the beginning. Because of the level of detail she included, even giving them their address and phone number, and also she like drew a little picture and hid it in the house.
Yeah.
As well as talking about them watching Rocky together. Kate described David as small, with an abnormally long hooked nose, and Catherine as a short woman with a permanent frown and high cheekbones.
Amazing.
Right? Those are like good descriptions.
They're like good cartoon descriptions. Yes.
Kate led them to the house, but when they got there, no one was home. They waited around in a van until Catherine eventually got home, where she was apprehended and told the police where they could locate David, and he was picked up at work. Police began searching the home, and they were able to locate her purse and the packet of cigarettes, as well as the drawing that she said she hid in the house. When the couple got to the police station, an interrogation immediately began, but their stories were conflicting. Catherine denied meeting Katie, saying that she only recognized the girl, but David insisted that the girl had come over for consensual sex. The interrogation continued for the day and has been described as intense, but David wasn't really giving them much. So at around 7 p.m., Detective Sergeant Vince Cadditch said jokingly, "It's getting dark. Best we take the shovel and dig them up." To which David just replied, "Okay, there are four of them."
Yeah, that was easy enough.
Yeah, he just like gave up. Catherine was told that David confessed and also broke, telling them that everything that she knew. She also told police that after the murder of Denise, she wasn't sure if she wanted to continue doing these crimes. She said that she liked the sex that they had with their victims and didn't even mind the stabbing and strangling, but really didn't want to go through with it again. And this was the reason that she gave for leaving Kate untied, saying, "I think I must have come to a decision that sooner or later there had to be an end to the rampage." The couple agreed to take police to the burial sites, and they were described by some as being excited and proud to show off their sites.
Yeah, which is disgusting.
Mm-hmm. They took a convoy of 10 people to the sites, and like David was described as being relaxed and very chatty while they were driving, and he was so chatty that he actually missed one of the turns to the graves.
Yeah.
And he showed them the first three graves, but when it came to Nolene's, Catherine began taking credit for it. She told police that she had never liked Nolene and was mad at her for captivating her husband. So she spat on the grave right in front of the police.
Yeah.
Which is so disrespectful.
Oh, it's incredibly disrespectful. Like, everything about this case makes me hate Catherine.
Mm-hmm. It appeared that she didn't want to have David take all of the credit for the crimes either. And while they were leaving the grave sites, David said to one of the detectives, quote, "What a pointless loss of young life." And after the murders hit the news, a 19-year-old college student came forward and told police that a couple had tried to pick her up while she was walking home. She said that she felt uneasy, and when she saw the body of a young boy or girl laying in the back seat, she didn't accept the ride. And this actually happened to be the body of the passed out Denise Brown. Mm. But the description that this girl gave to police perfectly matched David and Catherine.
On November 12th, 1986, the couple went to trial. The charges of four counts of willful murder were presented. At this time, no pleas were entered and bail was refused. Catherine was asked if she wanted to be remanded for 8 or 30 days before her next court hearing, but she just looked at her lover saying, "I'll go when he goes."
I hate her.
Yeah. In February 1987, David pled guilty to four counts of murder and one count each for rape and abduction. When asked why he pleaded guilty, he said, "It's the least I can do," while gesturing towards the victims' families. He believed that showing remorse would help him out with his prison sentence, and he wanted to show himself as a struggling sex addict who was forced to kill his victims so they couldn't identify him. But we all know that he got pleasure out of killing them.
Exactly.
Also, just don't rape people and you won't have to murder victims. You could just willingly have sex with people who want to consent to it.
What a crazy concept.
It is fucking wild. I know. It's crazy. He was sentenced to four consecutive life sentences, and while Justice Wallace was doing this, said, "The law is not strong enough to express the community's horror at this sadistic killer who tortured, raped, and murdered four women. In my opinion, David John Burney is such a danger to society that he should never be released from prison." On this date, Catherine did not have to plead guilty as they were waiting on a psychiatric report to determine her sanity, but she was still there in court with him, like, as emotional support. Mm-hmm. Then on March 3rd, Catherine was found sane enough to stand trial, and going to court, she was dressed casually and was barefoot. When she was being led to the courtroom, she fought with the officers the whole time, telling them not to touch her. When she got to the room and saw David, she calmed down immediately. She was also sentenced to four consecutive life sentences. And the whole time that she was being sentenced, she was sitting behind David and she held hands with the man who led her down this deep-ass dark path.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think they should have been able to hold hands in the courtroom.
I don't think so either. I don't think, like, why is he in the courtroom to emotionally support her anyway when he's been, like, already got his charges? I don't know. I just think it's strange. Justice Wallace also had something to say to her, saying, "In my opinion, you should never be released with David Burney. You should never be allowed to see him again."
True.
Yeah. After their sentence, Catherine freaked out again while being led to the police van to take her to the prison. She had to be dragged out of the court while kicking and screaming. David, on the other hand, walked out willingly. As he was transported into the van, crowds gathered outside and began cursing David and throwing garbage at him. He turned to the crowd, smiled, and blew them a kiss. In prison, David was often the target of beatings and spent a lot of time in the infirmary, and eventually was moved to a different prison for his own protection. While incarcerated, the couple exchanged more than 2,600 letters between each other, but were not allowed any other forms of communication. In 1990, David met with a judge and told him that not being able to see Catherine was causing him to spiral into a complete physical and mental breakdown, and this may cause him to commit suicide. Despite his pleading, the judge denied any sort of reunion between the two.
And Catherine had also stopped responding to letters from David because she thought that if she had cut off communication with him, that it would be like a better chance for her to get parole one day. Mm. So, on October 7th, 2005, David was found dead in his cell at Casarana Prison. He died by suicide by hanging and was 54 when he died. He was hanging from an air vent with a length of cord. Detectives say that there are many factors that may have caused this suicide. The inability to see Catherine, the fact that he was denied antidepressants, which is probably a big one.
Yeah.
And the fact that his personal computer had been confiscated when tons of pornographic images were found, so, like, he had nothing to satisfy his sexual appetite.
Just be alone with your fucking thoughts like everyone else, my guy.
And the next day, he was actually set to appear in court for the rape of a fellow prisoner. Catherine was not allowed to attend his funeral, and his body was never claimed, so it was just cremated. David's daughter, Tanya, never married or had children, stating that she wanted David's lineage to end with her, and, quote, "I didn't want to spawn another David Burney."
That's so fucking crazy, dude.
I know. Catherine, on the other hand, is still alive. She's currently at the Bandy Up Women's Prison, where she is the head librarian. In 2000, her first husband and father of her six children passed away, and she made an application to attend the funeral, but was denied. She applied for parole in 2007, but was rejected when the attorney general at the time said her release was unlikely while he remained in the office. While appealing for parole, the chief investigating officer on the case, Paul Ferguson, said, "I honestly believe that woman has never given those victims 1 ounce of consideration, both the dead victims and the victims of the families. She's an actor. The person I met is all for herself, and she will do whatever is necessary. There were parasites who lived off each other, the most evil people I've ever come across." And he also said that they never saw their victims as people, and instead they were just toys and instruments for the couple to use for pleasure, and that she forfeited her right to walk out of prison.
Yeah.
In 2010, her case was up to be renewed again, but they got a new attorney general who revoked her non-parole period, making her the second woman in Australia to have her papers marked as never to be released.
I think the first one is Catherine Knight.
Is it?
Yeah. I don't know for sure. That could be a blatant lie, but I'm pretty sure it's Catherine Knight. Mm-hmm.
In a letter to one of her children, she tried apologizing, saying she wasn't proud of what she did, but she has to live with it, and hopefully one day a doctor will have answers on why she did these things. Kate Moore, the girl who survived, became an ally for victims and fought to change Australia's parole laws to keep violent offenders like the Burneys from ever getting the chance to be paroled. And she actually found an ally in her fight with Catherine's youngest son, Peter. He was only 6 when Catherine left her family to be with David, and he said that he was emotionally scarred knowing that her mother was a serial killer. He also said that he had been bullied and beaten up multiple times when people learned that he's the son of Catherine. In Catherine's apology letter, she said, "I never stopped loving any of you kids, but I thought you'd be safer with your father. I'm not proud of what has been said about me, but I have to live with that and the memories. Maybe you'll write to me because I really like to hear from all of yous. I love you kids." And Peter's response to this, which I, like, listened to him speak in an interview, said, "It's rubbish that she's just trying to get close with one of her kids, so they say that they'll take on the responsibility of taking her in if she ever does get out, but we don't want that. It wouldn't bother me one bit if she was killed or executed. I'd party for a week. Hurry up and die. Quickly."
Yeah, I can imagine being the child of a serial murderer is not great.
No, not at all. Like, he said that, like, he's gotten his teeth knocked out and, like, just all this stuff has happened to him. And it's like, she ruined his life.
Yeah.
Because of that.
Yeah, that's really shitty. I would also probably not want to be around her or talk to her.
I feel like that'd be me. I'd be like, yeah, she can die. I don't care. Yeah.
All right, guys. We hoped that you liked this week's episode. If you did, make sure you go and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts.
Please remember to check out our website, crimebinge.com, where you can find information and pictures about each case And you can also submit your own listener stories or case suggestions to us. And also check us out on Twitter at Crime Binge or on Instagram and Facebook at Crime Binge Podcast.
And make sure if you have any extra spooky stories to send them in for October so we can do a listeners episode with your spooky stories.
Hell yeah.
And
keep on binging.
Bye.
See ya.